Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2019. Miss Judith Russell, Global Marketing Strategist Nilit presents Satisfying the Customer Who Has Everything, but Once More.
Good afternoon. I'm Judith Russell. I'm here to talk about sustainability and lots of other things. And you don't need to take pictures. I'll give everybody a copy of the deck afterward. If you give me a business card, I'll email it to you. So this, we're going to talk about something. The technical discussions are a tough act to follow, but hopefully I will inspire and give you some ideas, help some ideas that you have bubble to the surface. And I don't want it to just be me talking for an hour. It's not a lecture, it's a workshop. So raise your hand if you have questions, offer your ideas. How many people are in product development, design, product development? Raise your hand. Okay. How many people are in purchasing, sourcing? Couple people. Who's in marketing? Couple people. Who's in design? It's product development, right? What about you guys? What are you? You studying? Good. Do it your whole life. You have to. What are you studying? Textile engineering. Okay, good. Good. What do you think of the show? Pretty amazing, right? I'm here on behalf of Nilit. Nilit is a provider of nylon 6/6 fiber to the industry and the maker of Senseal branded nylon 6/6. So what are we going to talk about today? Satisfying the consumer who has everything but wants more. Who's the consumer? It's Google listening to us. So what are we going to talk about today? Some background first. What are the external factors, economic, technological, geopolitical, driving the consumer shifts, demographics, changes? What are the retail models that are being disrupted right now? We all, I think, can pretty much agree that retail is changing really rapidly. It's a very exciting time to be in this business, in this industry. And whether you're in fibers, finishes, yarns, fabrics, garments, you're in the retail business because that is the end game here. And if nobody buys what you're making, there's no business. Media is changing too, and that's impacting what we're doing. I'll talk a little about that. And then we can talk about why is the consumer so demanding, so difficult to please? And finally, who are the brands that are winning this game and why are they winning? And what can you all do in your role and your organizations to not only survive but thrive in this new normal? All right, the economic backdrop, pretty positive all around the world. And I know you can cover up a lot of the underlying trends with generalizations, but on the whole, global economies are stable and some are even very strong and growing. Couple of just factoids here. The EU, where we are right now, collectively is enjoying its seventh straight year of growth. Doesn't feel like things are always growing, but at the top line, it really is. In the US, where I'm from, in case you couldn't tell, I'm from New York, so I talk fast, so I'll try to slow down. GDP growth is quite strong. A lot of other very positive factors that are helping to drive economic growth, consumer purchasing being one of them. Corporate profits around the world are very healthy on the whole. Of course, there are winners and losers, as there are in every game. And financial markets are setting records. So the stock markets are doing very well. Bond markets are doing well. Why do we talk about this? Because it impacts the consumer, right? It impacts what we do every day at the end. Within the BRICS, and that's the, you know, the countries that everybody was watching, developing countries, China and India are the big stars, but Brazil and Russia are also seeing economic growth that they hadn't seen for a while. And as consumers, we're really doing okay. Job growth is fairly stable, full employment in the US. The downside of that is we've got income inequality. We've got a big income gap in the U.S. So the rich getting richer, the poor are getting a little richer, but the gap is widening. In the EU, you don't have such a big gap like that. There's more income redistribution, if you will. And in the developing world, China and India have huge numbers of people joining the ranks of the middle class who are going to be formidable consumers, already starting, and will be definitely markets for your products down the road, if not already. Technology, wow, such a big topic. We could spend days on this, and there are conferences that spend days and days on how technology is changing the whole world. What we need to think about here, though, is that consumers, us, and all the people we know, are more connected, informed, and empowered than ever before. So you see, we're leading to why we're so demanding, because we can be. It gives us price transparency. We can check on a price of anything anywhere in the world that we want to buy. It gives us unlimited and immediate access to product, information, to media. And it allows us to engage with each other and the brands we buy and the customers we sell to. Data analytics software abounds. Apps are everywhere. The smallest startup company has access to great software that would have cost 100 times what it costs now a few years ago. So that's really low barriers to entry to get into business, and that's what's making our market so competitive, is all the new concepts starting up all the time. On the supply chain side, things are getting more streamlined. Automation, CAD/CAM, digital design. We're not going to talk a whole lot about that because that's really on the back end, but it's really driving possibilities. And if you're not looking at ways to automate your part of the supply chain and the way you interact with your tier one and tier two partners, you need to be. Retailers are using their physical stores as mini warehouses, so they don't have to have big distribution centers anymore. All that's being made possible by technology. 5G is here. It's going to change a lot of things, speed things up, open up new possibilities. And we really see the next wave of digital commerce, which e-commerce, then was m-commerce, mobile commerce. We think the next wave is going to really focus on things like AI, VR, voice and visual discovery, the Internet of Things. So all these things are happening, and we're using them, and it's changing the way we live and our expectations. The world is flat, borrowing the term from the Thomas Friedman book. Obviously, this world isn't flat, but it's more interconnected and really seeming to get smaller, isn't it? Globalization is driving down the cost of goods. It's increasing our access to products, to other markets. It's also, on the flip side, causing an influx of supply, oversupply, cheapening, and a dumbing down in quality, unfortunately, at times, so we've got to be careful of that. Look at Amazon. They've got sites now they've got physical presence in 20 countries and delivery in more than 100, and that's up double digits every year. Retailers and brands, and probably a lot of you, are expanding across borders, and big brands like Zara, H&M, Primark, on and on, are opening of operations in more countries every year. How many of your companies are only in the past 5 years opening up international locations? How many have been in global brands for more than that time? So how many are just operating in one country? Okay, so the rest of you haven't decided not to answer the question. Okay, that's all right. I'll get you. People are increasingly traveling outside their home country. When you travel, you just hear every language and see people from all over the world that you didn't see 10 years ago, right? So the world is getting a little smaller. Now, still, though, in the United States, only 30% of the citizens have passports. So there's still a lot of room for growth in this expanding of our minds and cultural experience. And nationalism, on the flip side, is prevailing, right? We see a lot of it. It's causing a lot of the strife geopolitically. Just a couple of examples of exporting of global fashion. I was in China 2 weeks ago. On the left here, this is the Nike store in Shanghai on the Bund. That's the whole store. It's huge. It's incredible. Big mural. They're getting ready for the Olympics, obviously. And on the right is a mall in the same city. Lots of Western brands, brand new, gorgeous mall, very busy. And these are some of the brand stores that were there, weren't there 3 years ago. So what has all of this done? Globalization, technology, it's really caused tremendous disruption in our industry. Retail's undergoing a major transformation. The traditional players trying to figure out how to grow. They're seeing sales and earnings decline because of this oversupply, because of pressure on price, because of falling foot traffic in physical stores. You don't have that phenomenon so much in Europe, but it's huge in the US. This is a picture of a mall that I took. It was absolutely empty in the middle of the day. So we've got malls closing. We've got, in the US this year, so far announced 8,600 stores closing compared to 5,800 last year. So there's a huge consolidation of retail space and stores going out. And the reason for this, primarily, obviously, is the shift online, driven by Amazon. And Amazon sales have been growing double digits every year. In apparel is one of their fastest growing areas. And the prediction is, by some of the Wall Street analysts, that they're going to add another $50 billion in sales by the year 2024, which is, if you think about it, the equivalent of all of Macy's, Nordstrom, and Kohl's sales combined. And those are three very big retailers. So it's massive. And most of this, you know, is happening in the US, but I believe it's going to be accelerating in Europe as well. You've already got expectations, predictions of over $620 billion in sales in Europe online, 2020. Mostly Western Europe, but Eastern will follow, and fashion is the number one growth category. How many of you are, your companies have a pretty developed online business? Is it your own website or multi-brand sites? Your own website? Are you selling on marketplaces as well? Amazon, Zalando, others? It's all your own? Okay. China, Monday was Singles Day. Who's heard of Singles Day? So they did $38 billion in sales in one day, apparently $9 billion in the first 20 minutes. So Alibaba, JD.com, Tmall. Huge, huge event like Black Friday. And in China, the statistics tell us that there are 285 billionaires in the country. US, 600, 560 in Europe. So that's pretty amazing for a company that, a country that just joined the market economy less than a decade ago. So apparel, back to apparel. There's been a massive power shift, and this is really why we're talking today, from those who make to those who buy, from producers to consumers. And these consumers want what they want, when they want it, where they want it. So you see this bottom picture is a pop-up shop on the side of a mountain in Boulder, Colorado, placed there by a company called 37.5 Materials. And they said, well, we've got mountain climbers who need stuff, so we're just going to go to the mountain. It was a pretty cool experiment, and it got a lot of press. So what's the message here? You need to go where consumers are, and you need to give them what they want. And this is really hard to do, right? Because as producers, we're facing rising costs. We're facing price pressure. And we're really focusing on how to cut costs, not how to do things better. But if you don't rise above the cost cutting and the discounting, you're going to end up like some of the players that we're going to talk about in a minute. But first, let's talk about who's doing well. The premium market is strong. Why is that? Because they're doing something better and they're connecting with their consumers. Here's some of the brands, just an example. I mean, if there are so many brands doing well and really connecting and providing experience and great products, and these tend to be in the premium end, in their next-gen digital brands or direct-to-consumer, their luxury brands. But we've also got some really healthy players at the low price end of the spectrum. And these are providing very, very strong value through lowest price, convenience, and maybe they're sacrificing a little on quality, but the value is there. And have any of you heard of Fabletics? So it's a California-based brand. Their spokesperson is Kate Hudson. And when they first came out, the quality was really poor. And it's a subscription model. So you sign up and you get a product. You get something sent to you every month for $25 a month. They send you a new outfit. And the quality has just improved tremendously. They're doing really, really beautiful stuff now. And they're growing rapidly. Fanatics is another really interesting business model. Mostly sports team logos. Product, but their brilliance is in technology, the way they get in front of online shoppers right away. They have algorithms to figure out what sports teams you like, and as soon as that team wins a match, they send you an alert. It's really great. And of course, we got TJX, really good retailer, Walmart, biggest retailer in the world, and really taking a lot of things very seriously, like sustainability, like e-commerce. The middle of the market is under a tremendous amount of pressure. So right now, I would not want to be the CEO of Macy's because they really can't quite figure out what to do. The store in New York is not not representative of how the whole chain looks. It's a beautiful store, but if you go out into the suburbs and go into the middle of the country and see some of the stores, it's neither fish nor fowl. They really don't have a strong meaning and reason for being. So it's very tough. The wholesale model is a difficult one right now. Under Armour, same kind of thing. I believe they diluted their quality. They went into some distribution channels that probably weren't appropriate and it hurt the brand. JCPenney, same thing. Victoria's Secret, too much discounting. So a lot of pressure in the middle. Long tail, I'm not going to dwell on this, but there's a great book by a guy named Chris Anderson talking about the growth is going to be in small niche brands that collectively add up to a lot of the market, and technology enabled using social media, using the internet to reach their target consumers. Okay, just for a second, disruption in media. Traditional media is a broken model, and social media, although it has its challenges and its growing pains, these are the fashion editors of today, the top influencers, bloggers. You know all about this. Many with a global platform. So now we get to, does anybody have any questions till now? So now we get to the topic of what consumers want, and to borrow from Freddie Mercury as portrayed by Rami Malek, we want it all, and we want it now. So what do we want? and why? Well, let's look for a second at some of the demographic shifts that are really impacting retail. And most of it is really happening because of millennials and Gen Z. So younger consumers, and I see a lot of you in the audience, are, it's no news to you, but for some older folks, it's news, buying and thinking and living differently than the older cohorts. So what are some of these differences? Well, more value conscious, because this is a generation that came of age during the recession, the big recession we had a decade ago, and they haven't forgotten what it was like to be worried about jobs and houses and education and things like that. So very, very cost conscious, value conscious, frugal where they can be. And these are just generalizations. Not everybody is. I know, we all know people who aren't. There seems to be a common thread of sort of distrust of establishment, big corporations, banks. You know, we see a lot of mobile payments, a lot of bypassing institutions happening, a lot of bypassing big brands, except Apple and Starbucks. Those two brands can do whatever they want, and they'll be fine with this crowd. But younger consumers tend to be bypassing traditional retailers and looking for something different, shopping in a different place, making their own discoveries about brands and where to shop. And it's really the first generation that's been raised entirely on social media and therefore using that platform to seek and express a personal style or brand. So a lot of it's about uniqueness and figuring out personalization in this world that's becoming less personal, more connected, but less human connection. And it's also the most traveled generation in history, and the first generation where you're more likely than not to be a person of color, minority. So it's a really interesting shift, and it's driven a lot of some of the bigger trends of what consumers seem to want. So let's talk about in apparel. What are some of the main drivers that we see impacting demand? Number one, I know everyone else said it was sustainability. I happen to believe comfort is really, really important when it comes to clothing. After that, convenience. That's what's driving all the internet, right? E-commerce, mobile, two-day delivery, one-day delivery, two-hour delivery, convenience, right? Value, super important. And value isn't just low price, right? Value is what you get for what you spend. So something could be expensive, but it can deliver even more than that. So it's value. Transparency, authenticity, super important to consumers. They want to believe they can trust. So if you want to build a connection with your consumer, trust is a really, really important element to that. Sustainability is, I believe, expected, increasingly expected. So it's not a nice to have. I think we're going to see it becoming more a must have, and it's going to be up to all of us in the industry to provide it and be honest and deliver on that. They're not going to pay more for it. They're just not going to buy if they're not happy with your story there, okay? Quality, also important. And quality means different things to different people, as does comfort, as does convenience. You know, these are all sort of soft qualities, soft benefits, right? So it's really in the interpretation. Another trend that we're seeing is that multitasking clothing that can go across multiple applications and activities and do more than just look nice and cover the body, right? So if you've got some performance attributes, if you're comfortable all day long, if you can go from morning to evening into the workout. I mean, I see people in New York going to the gym in the morning and then going straight to the office, throwing a jacket over the leggings, which, I mean, seems kind of gross to me if you're sweating, but you know, that's, it's sustainable, right? It's cool. You're not wasting water with a shower in between, and it's becoming more acceptable. Elevated experience. What do we mean by that? If you are able to provide a fun shopping trip to somebody, they're more likely to come back. And we'll look at some brands that are really able to do that. And if it's not pleasant, you know, I'll just buy it online. They'll just buy it online. So these demands listed here, and there are, of course, many others. These are just to kind of inspire you and get you thinking. They really have been driving a lot of the key trends that we're seeing in the industry, from athleisure to recycled to wearables to multi-use clothing to using performance fabrics and dressy apparel, all these things, to sneakers. I mean, think about sneakers. Everybody's wearing sneakers for everything now, right? They're comfortable, they're convenient. So you get the theme here. So really delivering on as many of these as possible is a good idea. So just some of the brands and platforms that are offering, obviously Amazon for convenience, selection. There's a multi-brand marketplace called Revolve. They just went public. They're worth over $1 billion now. Two guys in Southern California just got a lot of these little micro brands together and said, we're giving you an e-commerce platform and we're letting you express yourself the way you want and do your social media, and they've grown very, very rapidly. ASOS was one of the first with the mobile shopping platform. I really think they've been very groundbreaking in this whole area. Customization. We hear the term mass customization, personalization. With the technology that we have, we are able to really limit quantities to those, to offer colors, size, all specialties. Here are a couple of brands here. Dia & Company is a plus-size brand in the U.S. that is doing really, really well, and they are doing small production. They are querying their customers, find out what they want, and they're delivering it very quickly. True & Co. is a bra company that has a size algorithm. Stitch Fix is a subscription model. Sends you a package of garments every month. You keep what you want, you send back what you don't want, and you pay for only what you want. And over time, they start to learn what you like, what you don't like, and they increase their ability to give you what you want. And they went public as well. Very, very good. Style with speed. We keep hearing about speed to market, and how we have to get faster and delivering style that's on trend without delivering too much. And why are we burdened with this? Because of Zara, because of Inditex, because they really wrote the book on how to do this. So how many people here shop in Zara regularly? Okay, so the rest of you are not telling the truth. Because everybody I see, every designer I see is wearing at least one thing from Zara every day. They're amazing, right? And so, how do they do it? Because they have frequent drops. They don't make too much. It doesn't go on sale. So it really rewards you to go in the store and see what they've got, right? When you're in the store, you buy something. Number of shopper visits for Zara compared to everybody else is 4 times. That was in a recent study by a consulting firm. So we've got a new concept of time, reduced lead time, shorter and frequent cycles. The whole buy now, wear now is really messing with the wholesale model. So if we don't get faster in the wholesale part of the business, we're going to really be at a loss because the direct-to-consumer crowd is already there with the trends. So just some examples of who's doing it well. Product is king, right? If you don't have great product, compelling product, interesting product, then you're nowhere. And here are just a couple of examples over the past few years of some concepts that have either turned their business around or come out of nowhere because of really amazing product. We also have these great brand collaborations. So start thinking not so much about competitors as about potential collaborators, because here are companies who've gotten together and done things that wouldn't have normally done that, and it really, really worked. Thinking about consumer values and subsegments of the consumer population and how to market, here's some really interesting marketing. This is an underwear brand called Tomboy X, and they feature models who are, let's say, not the mainstream, and they're growing exponentially. And of course, big on social media. Thinks is a women's hygiene underwear, and their marketing is really interesting because they're all about, you know, women power, and I love this patriarchy-proof underwear ad. Aerie, division of American Eagle Outfitter, is featuring regular-sized girls in their ads, and they're really evolving into a lifestyle brand that's all about embracing who you are and loving your own body, whatever size it is, and they're moving beyond underwear into jeans, ready-to-wear, accessories, everything. And of course, you know, Stella McCartney, I think, really deserves a shout-out for being really the first to talk about, you know, ethical fashion with the vegan leather accessories and footwear. So here we are with sustainability. And when we talk about it in terms of consumer values, you know, the consumers who are interested in the planet, and some of us are further along in this evolution than others, really want to see that the brands they're doing business with share the concern that they have in an authentic way. And, you know, fashion has become the new bad guy in this area. Lots of industries are at fault. Lots of consumer behavior is at fault here. But we're seeing the big push for this coming from some interesting parts of the world. And if you go shopping in these cities, I think you're gonna really have a great time exploring some new concepts. Copenhagen, Amsterdam, Berlin, London, New York's got a rising number of sustainable brands. Portland, Oregon, and I know this show takes place there now too, so it's appropriate. So, you know, I mean, you've been listening to the presentations all day. I'm not telling you anything new, all these different alternatives. I guess the big issue here is how, as brands, do we combat the greenwashing that's going on, the fact that the standards are still pretty loose. Consumers are very confused about all these standards, and they're not going to check a hang tag and say if you're this certified or that certified. So how do you connect with them on this and really become an authentic brand along the parameters you want to be, whether it's sustainability or social compliance or ethics or all that? It's a challenge, and I think connecting and moving downstream with your messaging is going to be really important, and keeping it simple. Here are some brands that are managing to establish a positioning, and there are many, many more, and lots of new ones. But here are some who've been kind of out for a while. ThredUp is an upcycling platform. Very successful and very well known. Allbirds is probably the hottest footwear brand in the world right now in terms of growth. Two guys in San Francisco from New Zealand decided to make a 100% washable, sustainable shoe, and it's just taken off. Patagonia is always, you know, they're the original, right? Poshmark is a resale app where people can sell the clothes to other people that they no longer wear. And I have three children in their 20s, and they're always selling their stuff on Poshmark and buying stuff from other people. And it's great because it's reusing what's already out there. And I think the resale market is, well, I know it's growing really, really rapidly. Swedish stockings, I'm just mentioning them because it's all recycled yarn in their hosiery and really beautiful products. Reformation is a 100% sustainable women's brand. And every time I go into their store in New York, there are people from all over the world just coming to see how it is they're doing it and hopefully taking the ideas back. Redone is upcycled denim. So just a few ideas. There are lots more, but you know, it's basically picking a strategy and sticking to it and doing it well. Ethical fashion, slightly different take, kind of more about social conscious and people rather than the planet. That's kind of how I distinguish it. Tom's Shoes, where you buy one and they give a pair to somebody in need. Warby Parker started that way in the eyewear business, and they still do it. You buy a pair of glasses, they order a pair, and they donate a pair. Bombas, same with socks. A couple of other brands that are really building their entire product and marketing strategy on being ethical. Pricing integrity and value, really important. Everlane is always mentioned in this same breath because they were the first to say, hey, this is how much it costs us to make this t-shirt, and here's the factory we make it in, and here's our markup, and it's low, and they're really, really successful with that. And it's interesting because a lot of other brands produce in the same factories, but they're growing faster because they're telling the story. So telling that story to your consumer is really important. They're not going to know otherwise. So if you've got a good story to tell, make sure it gets told. So another attribute of really successful brands is curation. I'm sick of that word too. Basically, it says picking what you're going to put out and show and not show everything. Be selective. So here are some retailers who I think have done a really great job in curation. Bandier is an activewear store in the US. They have very selective brands. They have events in their store. Great consumer engagement. Aritzia is a Canadian retailer that burst onto the scene less than a decade ago. And really beautiful products at affordable prices. And their store, physical retail for them is been very successful because of their presentation. No mention of curation would be complete without a slide about Dover Street Market, the Rei Kawakubo store. It's absolutely a joy to walk through and shop in. If you know, the product's pretty expensive, but it's a really great experience. And then, of course, Lululemon. Tests, retests, and lots of color, lots of really fun product to look at. So customer experience. We've all been in stores that are just so fun to be in. We want to go back again. And just to pick out a couple of examples in sort of recent memory, Apple always stands out because people love to go to those stores and just even hang out. It's just, there's a great energy there. And it doesn't matter where in the world you are, it's kind of that same energy. People just engaging with product and trying things out and talking. That on the upper right, anybody know what that is? Anybody from Milan here? It's the Starbucks roastery in Milan, and it's always packed, and there's always a party. It's a Starbucks. It's a coffee shop, but it's so great because you walk in and, of course, they're roasting the beans and they've got the pizza oven there and the stuff for sale. And it's just really, really great. Everything beautifully put together, from the marble on the floor to the bronze in the fixtures. On the lower left is an Urban Outfitters store in New York. Looks like a living room. People hang out, listen to vinyl records, look at product, have coffee. There's an ice cream stand in there too, and it's really a brand showcase. The lower right, anybody know what that is? It's a Nike store. It's the Experience store in Soho, and there are guys and girls playing basketball in there all the time and watching themselves on video. So these are just some examples of taking pretty basic products and putting them in an environment that just makes them elevated. A couple other crazy examples. Inscape is a meditation place in the middle of New York City. It was founded by the guy who started Intermix. And you can just go there and think and be quiet in the middle of the day. It's a Muji hotel. So taking a brand and extending it into a non-core product line, licensing to the hospitality industry and really showcasing the lifestyle aspect of it. The Xbox Stay and Play is a pop-up hotel in Australia where you can go spend the night and just play video games all night. It's pretty experiential and a great... I know so many people talk about this all the time. What a great thing for Xbox, right? So, and then in Singapore, the Nike running track where you can run against an avatar of yourself. So, again, you know, really thinking creatively and outside the box in terms of how to engage with consumers. And then, you know, on a more basic level, we talked about Macy's. I took this picture not too long ago in a Macy's store, and it really did look like this. And who wants to shop like this? Wouldn't you rather shop like that? So it's just, there's some really basic things here to think about in terms of how we connect. So brand story is important. Here's a couple of brands that, you know, when you see the brand, you think about the backstory if you know it, and some really, and I'll provide this deck for everybody. The celebrity connection, we can't not talk about that because, you know, the Kardashians have become almost a throwaway term about using celebrities to sell something, but it really does work. This Fenty brand, Savage by Fenty, Rihanna underwear brand, grew from zero to hundreds of millions in a couple of years. The Mons jeans, when Kendall Jenner wore them, all of a sudden sold out. So these are things that maybe it's not right for your brand, but if you're able to capture the imagination of a celebrity or influencer in the field in which you are, it certainly can help put you on the map. So just to go over, what does this mean, really? A lot of information, a lot of observations, and you have a lot of your own. I think it's fair to say that this disruption that we're experiencing is going to continue. It's not going to go away. Things aren't going to go back to the way they were back in the good old days of brick and mortar and two seasons a year. So how are we adapting? How are each of us in our roles, in our companies, adapting? Because if you don't adapt, you'll be out, right? How do we become more consumer-focused? It's really easy to say, it's really hard to do. I think So talking to the your consumers is really difficult to do. Is anyone doing that on a regular basis? Are you talking to consumers? How are you doing it? It takes a lot of time, though, doesn't it? And you can, it's like you know, being on the internet, it's like a black hole. You could, but it's so, so important. It's valuable. You're finding it valuable. If you are really able to engage them and really look at the information through an objective lens and listen, this is really, they're your guide, right? And continuous innovation is another. Never get complacent. Always think about how can we do things better? How do we disrupt ourselves? And invite ideas from everywhere in your organization, from any place that you have where you can get new ideas. Shouldn't just be, you know, management or the people who are supposed to be coming up with marketing ideas. Elicit ideas from everywhere in your organization. Supply chain partners. These are not just vendors and customers, but they've got to be your collaborators in figuring out ways to improve, innovate, get faster, get more efficient. Easy to say, difficult to do. I spoke to somebody, a major sourcing agent, a couple weeks ago, who said all of the software, all of the apps, all the algorithms are out there. It's just a matter of using them. We don't need to invent anything new. We just have to use them, and they are all compatible. So I don't know about that last part. Sometimes it doesn't seem so, but I think we can do a better job working together to streamline. And I think in terms of who's winning, we saw a lot of brands here that are doing a great job at being different, being unique, and really focusing on what they're good at. So figure out what you're good at, what is really your DNA, where do you want to be in this continuum of price, value, all these different benefits. I think at the end of the day, and there's no end of the day, right? We just keep going, but if you're the low-cost player, really low-cost, and able to do everything really efficiently, or you're offering something very compelling and unique and different and premium, you can both survive, but you can't be both, right? Because it costs something to do the specialty. So think about where are you on the line. And stop thinking about your competitors of competitors. Think about them as potential collaborators, because I think the days of silos are really over. We have to work together to get good things done, and we can all do it in a way that's win-win and ultimately a win for the consumer. So if you want to give me a business card, I will send you immediately out the deck tonight. If you have any questions, I'm here for a couple more minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2019 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.